welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill, how was your week?
Well, you know, Erin, it was pretty good. A little warm, you know, we're here in Reading and the onset of summer. And
2 miles from the sun.
It's not going to let us down this year.
No. We've already had some fires and everything.
Really?
Yeah, 2 fires up in the dope groves up in Siskiyou County.
Oh.
So it's a bad year to be a dope grower and have a fear of fire, I guess, or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe they just aren't good with matches. Deal. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing up there. So let's see. The archives are at wethepeopleradio.us. And in case you haven't heard us before, the archives are free to listen to. Robert Exter is our trusty helper. He takes the, what do we call them, our free enterprise moments, a.k.a. commercials, out so you can listen without any interruption. And now I'm hearing myself. There we go. No, I'm not hearing myself anymore. We have our guest, Harry Bouyans. We are experimenting with Google Meet. Since they killed Skype, I think they turned it into Teams or something. I don't know. It became unwieldy. So, anyway, we have our guest, Harry Bouyans, from Vancouver.
Yeah.
Are you hearing me pop in and out?
No.
Oh, you're not?
In loud
oh,
and clear.
I'm just hearing
no.
me, myself pop in and
you
out.
You know, the first time we had Harry on was in 2018, I believe.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It was a really long time ago.
Yeah.
And you know, the really interesting, I was talking to him this morning and, okay, Harry, you'll have to keep me on track because the things we talked about this morning, we still have to talk about again because this morning it was only the two of us. But lately, South Africa has been so much in the news. And I think people are finally starting to hear some of the things that we have spoken about quite a bit. And, of course, the mainstream media says nothing is happening to farmers and there's no reason we should be giving them a way in. So anyway, there are all sorts of things that are happening, and I'm excited that we're going to finally get to the bottom of all of this with Harry. Is he actually in there? I'm not sure.
Uh-oh.
Didn't hear his voice.
Uh-oh.
Ruh-roh. Okay.
I heard him earlier.
Cue the bio. So just in case you've actually never heard this, Harry Bouyans, it's Dr. Harry Bouyans, actually, to me. He's internationally recognized. He's a multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist, hence the doctor part. Originally from South Africa, his family goes back 360-plus years in that country. He currently lives with his family on the forested slopes outside of Vancouver, Canada. And his life as a scientist exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War and the period immediately following the fall of the Berlin Wall. It included interaction with the United States and British defense establishment, and he applies his lifetime of research and interpretive skills to history and genealogy and writes with factual accuracy and engaging style on the subject. His book is linked on our page today. Today is June 8th, 2025, and I hope you'll pop on there. And Amabulu is a terrific book. It's huge. So if you want to know what's really going on, has gone on, and some factual history of South Africa, not just the crazy stuff we've all been told that we actually thought was real. Hard Evidence is a trademark of his work and has won him a number of awards. He focuses on making Americans aware of what's happening in South Africa, the historic parallels between the two countries, and the warning that South Africa holds for Western civilization in general and the United States of America in particular. And honestly, can't stress that enough. The one parallel that I hope you go back and listen to that show now in retrospect, but the toppling of the statues, that began in South Africa, and just a matter of weeks later, it was here. So things in South Africa are not as far away as you might believe. So let's see. Do we have him in there? We have a new engineer. His name is Phil. Hi, Phil.
Hello. What are we? I'm getting him queued up. Let's see if we can get this to work here.
Okay.
You should be able to hear us now, but you might be able to hear yourself coming through that channel as well.
Okay.
Harry, are you in there?
Okay, I'm switching on my mic again, so yes, I can hear you now.
Oh, you're loud and clear.
Okay. Is he echoing for anybody but me? Or does he sound fine to everyone else?
He might be echoing because I have to run it through.
Am I still echoing?
Not on the air, but.
Okay. All right, good. As long as it's not on the air. All right. Where do you want to start today, Harry? The $64,000 question.
Uh-oh.
Where did he go?
I don't know. He was just there.
I know.
I think he fell off. He fell out.
DFO. He done fell out. Remember that?
Yeah.
We had a friend who was a fireman down in L.A., and they used to get emergency calls for a DFO.
So is this okay now or not?
Yes. Yes, we're set.
We're all good.
Okay.
All right. Where do you want to start? Because we have to talk about the visit to the White House. We've got to talk about South Africans coming to the U.S. We've got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know where to start, frankly, except to reiterate that President Trump seems to have done some or other announcement at the end of every first week on his way to Mar-a-Lago or wherever. He would stop in the parking garage or whatever and talk to the media and make an announcement that has profound consequences where I come from. He's done that for 4 months in a row, and now in June, he has not done it yet.
So you're waiting for your profound announcement?
I'm waiting for, I don't know what it will be, but he's made a point of making a profound announcement every time just before getting on the plane at the end of a working week, first working week in every month.
He's got, you know, it's one of those things like the news does. You know, you have to check back there. Huge weather front coming, and then they don't tell you anything, and you've got to go back and keep listening. He's got you on the hook. So you're sitting in Vancouver hanging on, when is President Trump going near a plane?
Yep. And one thing you can be assured of is if he has something to say, you're going to hear it.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't hold back.
No. I like that. That's great.
Yes.
You'll make a great South African.
Yeah. So this big interest in bringing... So we've talked about this a lot, what's going on with the farmers in South Africa. I don't even know if it's possible to sort of give a kind of a fast forward. And if you want the rest of the story, go back and listen to all the material that you've given us. Is there a way to get people to why? Because there are a lot of folks going, why are we bringing farmers from South Africa? Why do they get special asylum? Like, people have never heard about that.
To which the answer is, why haven't you been listening?
Well, there's that. Right? We have all done our level best to bring that information to them.
Maybe the best way to handle this is a little CIA report from 1986, which is extremely revealing. I happen to be the owner of a cleared but redacted CIA, I think they call them intelligence estimates, from around June, July 1986. And it says black on white. In other words, George Bush Sr. knew this. Ronald Reagan knew this. And it goes back to 1986. That's 8 years before Mandela became president. And it says a recent ANC statement, ANC is now the government in South Africa, specifically noted that white farmers and urban white males were considered by the ANC to be part of the government security forces and therefore valid targets for ANC operations. Shall I let that sink in? Okay, so... let me be very clear. The CIA knew this as far back as 1986, July. There's no doubt about it, because I have their documents here on my screen, okay? And just in case somebody tries to erase it, I've made sure I got other copies.
And just out of curiosity, when you say target, I mean, I know
I don't say target. The ANC and the CIA said target, valid targets for ANC operations. They
right.
were blowing up things. They were putting mines on farmers' roads. They were killing people in bomb explosions. They had already bombed my mother's apartment building, etc. So there's no doubt what this is. This is military operation.
Yeah, that kind of target. I just wanted to make sure we were clear.
This was all before the ANC was in power, correct?
Yes, exactly. So this behavior, these goals, this background is well established, well documented, well known. Nowhere for anyone to hide about this. If I, the little guy from the bush in Africa, can find this, then so can all of the U.S. media. And I would respectfully ask them to either do their homework or shut the hell up.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's there, in the hand of their own security organizations. Black on white. I'll read it again. According to the CIA, in its report to the president, was Reagan, and his vice president was Bush, who got the job of nailing down terrorist organizations internationally, and who then subsequently placed the ANC on the terrorist list of the United States, terror organization. The CIA says a recent ANC statement specifically noted that white farmers and urban white males, that's me, were considered by the ANC as part of the government's, quote, security forces, unquote, and were valid targets for ANC operations. It's that blunt. So, it's not like we have to talk a lot about it. They put it on paper way back then, okay? And all that the ANC has done is it's gone ahead with that. It came to power. It's like a leopard that never changes its spots. And it just carried right on doing what it was doing, but now with all the powers of a government. And it still went after the farmers, and it still killed them. This is not deep. This is not complex. This does not require infinite analysis. They gave it to all of you guys black on white.
Yeah, and most people kind of ignored it. And why do you think that is? Because it just seems far away and has nothing to do with them?
Let me put it to you this way. The answer is yes, but let me make this one clear. I think folks in America, even Democrats, God help them, realized that they've been BS'd severely for at least the past 4 years and most likely the past 8 years, if not much longer. And they're right there. They're in Washington and they were fooled. And they're in the United States and they were fooled. And they could have stuck their heads out the window and seen for themselves what's actually going on. And they were fooled and they were misled. And now they're all having to kind of make peace with the facts of the situation. It got led by a president who clearly was out of it, okay, and everybody denied it, and now they can see it. Imagine a heap of people 12,000 miles away in Africa. What chance do you think they have of making Americans aware of the truth, if Americans cannot even see the truth when they stick their heads out the window? How does that work? I don't get it.
Yeah, that's kind of an excellent point, actually. And does that look as crazy to you outside the country as it does to us inside the country?
For us, the consequences have been infinitely worse. It meant death for many. So, it's more a case of just being permanently incredulous. How can the most powerful, most highly educated nation on earth, with the most money to pay for facts, to find out what's going on, how can that nation be so clueless? I don't get it. I've never understood it, and I haven't understood it since I was 6 years old. Because then I could stick my head out the window and see that what Time magazine was writing was not true. And I knew about it because my mother worked for a book distribution company that distributed Time magazine in South Africa. I got all the I got the unsold copies of the week. So I read them. And what I read and what I saw by sticking my head out the window didn't check.
Well, you got to...
So I've been on about this all my life. Part of that life was then consumed with a professional career and then in Canada with trying to put a whole new life together. But finally, one day, some lowlife stepped over a line of mine by suggesting that farmers ought to be killed. And that's a local Canadian guy, actually an ex-South African Canadian guy.
And his rationale for that was what?
Oh, no, they had benefited somehow from apartheid, though I don't see how. Most of them paid for their farms or inherited them from 150 years ago. These farmers in the most targeted area have been farming there for 150 years. They've had title for 150 years.
And they stole them from no one.
They didn't steal it from anyone. There are spots in South Africa where the government, between about 1948 and 1975, in that period, which was sort of the high apartheid era, where they moved black people around, and that was unfair. That was definitely unfair. But this idea that farmers stole their land from indigenous people, that's BS, man. Complete rubbish. This is all done under the pretense that of Africa must be for black people, okay? Given that most of them have never seen an Arab in the north of the continent. Given the fact that many of them are racist because they think that people like the Somalis are Bantu Africans, they're not. They happen to have black skins. But you call a Somali African and see what happens. You better be armed, okay? You call a Somali an African and see what happens. And that's not even counting all the Khoi people in the southwest of the continent. So this idea that Africa is only for black African people of Negroid descent, this is something that's completely made up. And it suits this ANC. So what they do is they basically sick the, as you sick a dog, they sick the lowest level of their voting population on the white people in the middle so as to distract attention from how they're messing up at the top. That's what's going on here. Okay? But
it's like the age-old magic trick, you know?
Yeah.
Watch this hand while I've got something else going on. Harry, we have to take a really quick break, and we're going to come right back. This topic is not a new one here, so we are kind of glossing over some of the deeper dive on some of the ideas, but I hope you will go to the site and look at this tab that is clearly linked to South Africa. I think we've done at least 20 shows over the years. They're all clearly marked, free to listen to. Go get smart about South Africa. I think you'll be shocked, actually, about what you've been taught your whole life. And we'll be right back with our guest, Harry Booyans. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Soul, then it's just your body. Then they go,
Yeah, when they've gone too far. So, with this whole thing, Harry, when on the ground, just out of curiosity, from your observation and all, when on the ground did this, I realize it started a long time ago, but when did it become, like, bad? Because it was bad when we spoke with you back in 2018, so it had to have been bad prior to that.
I wrote my book in 2012, and it was already horrific.
Okay. And we were hearing pretty much nothing.
Yeah. I beat a drum here for more than a decade with, you know, much less than a whisper coming back.
Yeah, because it seems like it's like someone else's problem. And it's been sold as a an issue of racism and fairness and I don't know what else you want to call it, reparation almost.
So let's check that just for a sec.
Yes, please.
Okay? Just get like some numbers. So I know that folks distrust the CIA, but can we agree that it's unlikely to lie about the size of a country? Like it could get the geographic surface area of South Africa correct? I'm prepared to grant it that much. Now, according to them, the surface area of South Africa is 121,973,200 hectares. Okay, 100 yards by 100 yards, roughly. If that's the case, then the 26,663,000 hectares of land owned by white farmers is 21.9%. Now, I dare you, this is a challenge. This is a straight out challenge to any American listening. Go find your trusty newspaper and see if any one of them has the depth of character to report that correct number. 21.9. It's actually 21.86 if you want to have it more precise. That is the percentage of the surface area of the country that is owned by white farmers. Okay?
And when you, since you look at the reporting, obviously a lot more than from a much wider set of sources. When you read about that, what do they commonly say, or do they just skip over the actual number and just say they say
it's anything from more than 90% to 80% to 72%. So the lowest number I've ever heard anyone in the formal media quote is 72%.
Oh, my God. So it's like epic lying.
It's epic lying. It's absolutely
epic. And it's
epic.
What, 21.86?
21.86. You have my permission to round that up to 21.9.
I was going to go for the 86 since it was like trapped in my mind now.
You are going to stop short of 22 because I'm not giving anybody that quarter.
But still, that's basically a full 50% off.
Yeah.
Wow. It's kind of interesting though, and I'm not going to say without the dire consequences, without the life changing consequences, but in California, 50% of the water in California gets flushed out to the ocean for what they call environmental purposes, aka fish.
Yeah.
So 50% of the water goes out. Well, if you look at 100% of the water in the state, 50 gets flushed out, 40 goes to agriculture, and 10 goes to municipalities. Yeah. But rather than tell the public that they're constantly beating on about, you know, taking showers as a group and different stuff, you know, to save water.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty hard case to make when you're flushing 50% of it to the ocean.
Yeah.
So they skip the 50. And they talk about how agriculture is using 80% of the water in California.
But it's 80% after that 50.
Yeah, yeah. It's really 40. And so it's kind of interesting that, you know, people say, well, statistics don't lie. And like, well, you've obviously never taken a statistics class. So
yeah, you can make it say whatever you want.
But, yeah.
The people using the statistics do lie.
Yeah.
So here's the point.
Interesting.
So some people then say, okay, but we've got to talk about individually owned land.
We do.
Then the number is much higher.
What does that mean?
But the black people historically never individually owned land.
Oh.
They hold it collectively. The chief holds the land, or the king of that nation holds the land, and then he apportions it to people so they can farm there and run their cattle there, etc., etc. It's not so different from what I would assume you had with the various Plains Indians, and, you know, where could they have their horses run and stuff like that. It's not, there weren't title deeds. Now, so you can't compare it like that. So then I add for you the absolutely insane, evil thing, which is, in fact, the old black homelands, the old apartheid homelands, as they called them, which were not apartheid homelands. It's where those people had always lived. So if, when you look at that, you realize the government owns that land and they don't give individual black people title to it.
So they don't count in the equation.
So they don't count it in the equation. So they're taking out everything they can possibly take out. And then they say, what white people own, what white farmers own, must be divided by this little restant thing under the line, which is basically the country minus almost the whole country. Okay? So that's how they do it. And then they come up with, so of the individually held farming land in South Africa, white farmers own 72%. That is correct. But that is not how land is held by black people who have an entirely different culture and an entirely different way of working. And, just by the way, white people are not allowed to farm on that black land. So, a lot of the country is no-go for whites. But when it comes to what surface area do they own, then suddenly all that stuff is removed from consideration. And like you're saying, all the water that goes to the fish, that doesn't count.
Right.
For figuring out who gets what. It's exactly the same thing.
It really is.
Son,
for the same reason, because, you know, if I don't say this 5 times a day, I think I say it 10. But just like with children and dogs, when you're explaining, you're losing. You know, you just, those are two groups you don't explain. And we all know that. So when you have to explain the whole thing, you realize that a tiny percentage of the people will ever get the message and the rest of them are going to believe what they were told because it's kind of complicated and they don't have all the information.
So now let me explain to you how this ultimately ends when the very last white farmer gives up his land. When he does that, he will be owning 100% of the farmland in South Africa. Why? Because the government, when they expropriate land from white farmers, they don't actually give title of that land to any of the supposed black people supposedly being now benefited with it. They don't actually get the land. They have created things called communal property associations. So the government gives it to this community property association, call it a tribe, that's what it used to be called. So they give it to this tribe, who then keep a couple of chickens, 5 goats, maybe 5 cows, and put a couple of corn pips in the ground, right? Effectively neutering that place as commercial agriculture. So, but they don't get title. The government doesn't give title of that to that land to these people. The end result is that as they take away more farms from white people, this denominator under the line, because that's the same thing with a fish. What you do is you make sure the denominator gets smaller and smaller and smaller by removing things from it. Like water for the fish doesn't count. That comes out of the equation. Now, land taken from white people comes out of the equation because they're not giving it to black people. They're giving it to associations. And the end result is that last farmer will be in the invidious position of owning 100% of the land before he loses it. I mean, he'll own 100% of the land. Of the farmland, he'll own 100% because
the
other land that's been taken away from white farmers is never shown properly on the books. It's never shown as with proper title deed. Black farmers don't get given those title deeds. And here is the sick irony of the situation. The white Afrikaner organization AfriForum, who have a legal wing, they've done rather well with their legal wing. A small number of black farmers have thrown their hands in the air and gone to AfriForum for help. And AfriForum helped one or two of them to get title. And he helped, and they helped some others to get squatters of their land. So do not think for one moment that black people are benefiting from this. That is a lie. It is a racist lie. Black people are not benefiting from this. The very least that's happening is they're going to face starvation because there's not going to be enough white commercial farmers to grow all the corn for them from which they get the cornmeal that is their staple.
Yeah, and we have, we've talked before that their history is not in farming, the black community. It's not in large-scale agriculture.
The concept of commercial farming is a foreign idea to these people. Their idea of the usage of land is it's either as pasture for their cows, or they might plow a little patch around the hut or the house, and there they will sow some stuff for their own use, typically corn or millet. And my comment to you is, that corn and millet is used for own consumption, which is why it is called subsistence farming. You grow a few things in order to subsist. You don't build an economy that way. You certainly don't build an agricultural sector that way. And now let me tell you how this gets particularly mean. Because the title deeds are not given to these folks, it means they can't provide any bank with any security. They can't, give the deed to the bank to hold as security to raise a loan to get anything done. So they cannot raise money to get the farming done.
They couldn't even become large-scale agriculture because
they cannot become large-scale. Yeah. So the end result of this is, let's call this what it is. This is a collection of gangsters that were forced in there by the Clinton administration way back in 1994. Clinton fawned over Mandela and that lot. Eventually, Dabia in 2008 removed the terrorist status from their name. And what they're doing is they have basically stolen the country. They've stolen all the resources. They have annihilated entire industries. They have corrupted everything, and they have bankrupted the state airline. They have bankrupted the state power utility. Many big places are not getting consistent water anymore. If there's anything called infrastructure, it is failing or has already failed. This is the end game of this is how a civilization ends. So if Americans want to know how America will end one day, $1,000 airfare to South Africa, just go and sit down there and take a look. This is what it looks like when it all finally goes to hell and communism takes over and socialism takes over.
Let's take a quick break, because I want to come back with that that idea. I'd like to know what they think that looks like, and why would I mean? I realize we don't think that's a good goal, but when the, if they were sitting all together, how are they selling this as a great idea? Besides the fact they're in charge of everything, but we'll come right back. Our guest is Dr. Harry Bouyans. We are discussing South Africa, past and present, big time on present, and worth American scrutiny and some study, because this really does parallel what's happening here. You can find all that information at wethepeopleradio.us.
And I find it kind of funny, I find it kind of sad. The dreams on which I'm dying are the best I ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very mad.
Short answer is yes. You knew too much and we're terribly sorry, but it's made you crazy. So what they're doing turns into, you know, starvation and a bunch of other unpleasantness.
Yeah. They don't see that.
They don't see that.
No.
So they think that they're going to have, what, this Marxist dream where the government doles out everything to everyone because now no one produces, owns anything?
It's going to be very good, like in the past, like when we had chiefs. The chief is going to look after you. The chief will make sure that the food is there.
Oh, is that the narrative?
Yes. You go to the chief and you give the chief the presents. And the chief, he looks after you. The chief, he will tell you where you can keep your cattle. The chief, he will tell you where you can put up your hut. The chief, he will tell you where you can get the seeds. Everything will be good like it used to be before this horrible white man came here.
Oh, and that's the pitch.
That's it. It's not deep. It works.
No, that's pretty straightforward.
Especially when you have members of parliament stand up and say, this was a good place until some Dutch guy arrived in 1652. Okay?
Like he was there.
I like having arguments with Microsoft Copilot because I accuse it of being woke, you see. And yesterday this thing came at me and it said that my old hometown of Port Elizabeth has been renamed to Paberga. So, of course, you can trace the likeness between Port Elizabeth and Paberga. To which I explained to this thing that is, in fact, not a Khoza word at all. It's a made-up word, and they're just trying to stick it to white people. They're just trying to find anything to aggravate, annoy, upset, whatever. They're inventing history that never existed. You know, anything goes. You need to understand, it's okay to steal cattle from another tribe, right? You get praises for stealing cattle from another tribe. You just don't steal from your own tribe. You do that, you get killed.
Huh.
So life used to be very nice.
It's good to have rules.
They remember. So I told this thing, well, you're talking about Port Elizabeth. Do you understand? Do you realize that there was absolutely nothing there before the year 1820? There was a little wooden fort. That's all there was. There were no Amakosa people, no black people either there. It was the British Army turned up in 1799, and they put up a little wooden fort at the place, and it stayed like that till 1820. So what is this that they think they should, quote, get back?
Yeah, what they were never displaced, so you can't get back something where you never were.
Yeah, and then I have to sit and read here, even Wikipedia, how the white farmers trekked north into Africa to go and practice slavery. What on God's earth are they talking about? Those farmers didn't really even have slaves. You don't really need slaves to do cattle ranching. If nobody's noticed, go ask the nearest cattle rancher. You need it for cotton fields. There are no cotton fields where those guys came from. So, interestingly, it was a Canadian historian just at the turn of the last century who wrote, when the British took over the old Transvaal Republic in 1877, they immediately set about trying to release all the slaves that are supposed to be there, and then to their amazement found that there were none. So they couldn't set any free.
Awkward. Terribly awkward.
Terribly awkward. Their propaganda of decades and decades and decades, they suddenly went and annexed their own BS, okay? And that's when they had to report, unfortunately, sir, I have to report to headquarters that we have been unable to find any slaves because these damn Boers don't have slaves, the idiots.
Actually, if he was smart, he would have been back and told him that the situation was all handled and they released them all.
You know, the Brits never cease to amaze me. Never in the history of mankind has there been a nation that could BS itself with such gay abandon and then make music to it.
That's nice. That's a nice line. I like that.
So this is
theoretically returning to a time that never was, which parallels another thing that's going on. You know, I mean, we regularly do environmental projects. You know, let's take out the Klamath dams and the river will have more fish and it'll have more water, and like it has neither. And everybody's like, oh, but it'll happen later. Well, that's funny because it never happened in the past. So why would it happen now? But they were able to do the largest dam removal in the history of the world. Based on fiction. So anyone out there listening who thinks, well, this never happens here.
I have managed to pull up that CIA document in front of me here. And I thought, if you'd allow me, I would just quickly like to share.
Oh, yeah.
That it is its name and number. Let's just see here. It says SNIE. 73-86. That 86 stands for the year. It's dated July 1986, and I have a photocopy of copy number 509. That's scary in itself. It means that in 1986, already when the CIA did an intelligence report, they made 509 copies. I wonder how they controlled those.
Probably in Joe Biden's garage.
The title of the thing is the African National Congress of South Africa, Organization, Communist Ties, and Short-Term Prospects, Special National Intelligence Estimate. And then, just in case we have difficulty understanding who this is, it says, this estimate is issued by the Director of Central Intelligence, and then it says, the following intelligence organizations participated in the preparation of the estimate. The Central Intelligence Agency, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, and the Intelligence Organization of the Department of State. I'm trying to figure out what that last one is. Anyway, also participating, the Assistant Chief of Staff for Intelligence of the Department of the Army, the Director of Naval Intelligence, Department of the Navy, the Assistant Chief of Staff, Intelligence Department of the Air Force, and Director of Intelligence Headquarters, Marine Corps. So the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines, they were all there in this thing. They all knew this.
And give me the document again, and I'm going to write it down so people can go there and look that up if they want.
I can send you the link after the show if you wish.
Oh, that'd be even better.
So let me do that rather than burn up any more airtime for you.
Perfect.
Its number is SNIE 73-86.
Okay.
July 1986. And it's on the internet. It's right there.
Yeah. Link coming soon. Okay, perfect. Thanks. I'll watch for it.
So this stuff is real, okay? It's real. And this is the homework I did before I first opened my mouth.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then there's something else that I think that folks generally lack. They don't have a feeling, bluntly put, for the size of South Africa. Okay, sure, I said 121,900 and something hectares. But here's the way you can make up South Africa, if you wish, out of American states. I did this quickly. You can add Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, and then you can go inland, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and Kentucky. And then you'll be over by about 2,000 miles, so you can take out Rhode Island. Like anybody's going to miss it. Okay? So my comment to you is, that is the size of the place.
Yeah, it's...
It's big.
right. So it isn't like everybody's crammed in a tiny city fighting over scraps. There's plenty of room.
In your local terms, if you put California and Oregon and Washington State together, you would not yet be at the size of South Africa.
Yeah.
It's bigger than that. You'll have to lump in a piece of Nevada.
And from a population standpoint, it isn't.
It's 60 million.
Yeah.
Of which about 45 million would be black people. There's about 2 million Indians, of the order of 5 million whites, of the order of 5 million so-called coloreds, which are people of Khoi descent, all of them mixed with white to greater or lesser degrees, and also people of Indonesian and Indian descent. But way back from the 1600s, these are Indians who came with the Indians and Indonesians who came with the Dutch in 1652.
And they have to get out too. I mean, are they also under the gun here, literally?
Everybody who's not black
okay.
is in danger. Is that blunt?
All right, that's what I remembered you telling us.
And if you, I have it on the authority of one of the families that came out to the U.S. in this first plane flight, mm-hmm. that there was at least one colored family among them.
Okay. When we come back in the next hour, we're going to talk about that. What's going on with the people that are coming to this country? What's the narrative? The visit to the White House, all that stuff. So
okay.
We will hit that running on the backside of the news. Our guest today is Dr. Harry Booyans. We are discussing South Africa current policy coming up. Mm-hmm. And you can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And you know, Bill?
Yes, Aaron.
You just can't talk about this stuff enough. So, for people who maybe haven't listened or don't listen regularly, we would love to have your support and sponsorship. We would love to promote your business, actually, if you would like us to. We would love to do that. You can find it all at wethepeopleradio.us. I think the phone numbers are on there. I think I might have to take them off. Something when you put your phone number on the internet, then all of a sudden it... I don't care if I get a lot of calls. I get a lot of calls anyway, but it just started to make a mess. It spammed me to death. But our emails and stuff were on there. Were super easy to find. And we would love to promote your business if you are happy with what we're doing. If you have ideas for shows, I'd like to hear from that as well. Our format, obviously, is really well situated for stories that take some time. Ideas that need to be developed and people who have a lot of information that they never get to share. In anything more than a soundbite. We're the beyond soundbite people. So anyway, our guest today is Dr. Harry Booyens. We were talking about South Africa, and it finally is kind of in the mainstream news. But again, and I know all of you out there listening, regardless of where you are politically, will be shocked to find out that the media hasn't necessarily been telling you the truth.
I know, it's shocking.
Collective gasp.
Yeah.
No, not that again. So
we did hear about
the
White House.
Yeah, the people that are coming here and all that. Maybe you could unpack that for people, Harry. Why? I mean, obviously they're doing it because of everything we talked about in the first hour. People are either going to be killed, or they're facing a death, ruination, destruction. Nothing good is coming for them, correct? There's like no...
Sure, I mean, one lady farmer that was interviewed had been attacked three times on a farm.
And we're not talking like they came and yelled at her. I mean, this isn't... They wore rainbow-colored outfits and screamed racial slurs at her. I mean, this is light people on fire, burn your house down...
That's much, much, much worse than that.
More than light on fire? That's bad.
Aaron, they have, and on at least one occasion, they took the young son of the farmer and they boiled him alive.
Holy crap.
In at least one case, they took cooking oil, they covered the farmer's wife in cooking oil, and then they ironed her with a hot clothes iron until she died.
Holy crap. Who would even think of a thing like that?
You want me to carry on?
Yeah, I do. It's ghoulish, but you know what? People should know what's really going on.
It's really that bad. In the most recent attack in last week, they... Now, hang on. Not this very past week, the week before, at the town called Brits, very near the capital of Pretoria, there was a couple on the farm. The gentleman was in a wheelchair. These five, I believe, Tswana-speaking blacks came. They attacked them, and they beat him to a pulp with an antique clothes iron, a very heavy one that works by purely by weight, right?
Oh, sure.
Use this thing to beat him up with, and in this past week he died from his wounds. Okay? It just goes on and on. They took some elderly folks to supposedly keep them from warning anybody. After they'd finished with them, they came along with pots of boiling water and they stuck their feet in the boiling water so as to cripple them. Okay, yeah, there is no depravity that is beyond these people.
So we're super clear, when you, you know, when you're in South Africa, who are these people that you see coming?
Well, they're invariably black. They somehow, in majority, they tend to be from the interior Sotho Tswana people. There have been farm murders in Natal where the perpetrators were Zulus. There have been farm murders where the perpetrators were Amakosa. But the two very big Nguni, as they're called, races, are the Amakosa, that's Mandela's people, and the Zulu. But they do not make up the bulk of the perpetrators. It is the other black nations who live in perpetual fear of those two. It's those others that appear to be the mainstay of these operatives, if one can call them operatives.
It is supported by the government, is that correct?
Well, no one can draw a direct link between no one can find a document by the government instructing somebody to go out and murder farmers.
So they're not having summer camp for hit squads, but somehow magically they're forming and going out and doing it.
Okay. So I think the only way that I know of addressing that question is to play that clip of Malema again. Because I have it here somewhere, if you'll bear with me. And maybe it's time that people hear it again now that there's context for them. Give me a second here. Let me just try and find it.
Now, is this the same gentleman that visited the White House?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not.
He is, and I have that clip. It's on our webpage.
Yeah, except this is a cleaned-up version, I believe.
Oh, nice.
By cleaned-up, I mean... the quality's been improved. This is Matt Gaetz.
So
we can't hear it.
Something bonkers is happening in South Africa.
There we go.
So could you hear that when it played?
We could hear the guy saying something bonkers is happening in South Africa, but the rest is too far off.
Okay. And before that, did you hear the guy sing "Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer"?
No.
Hell is that? You should be able to hear both.
I do have the clip. I do have that clip.
Okay, I don't know what to do about that. Last time we had the same problem. Maybe there's a lag time or something that kicks in. Because he was screaming, kill the farmer, kill the Boer,
yeah,
kill
right.
the Boer, kill the farmer. Okay, and he did that loudly before Matt Gaetz spoke.
I'm going to put the, I've got the link for our other, for the show we're doing with you. And the link is on that page. If Phil can click
it. I don't know why I am fighting statistics like this at all.
Yeah,
I'm having this guy scream his murderous junk at people from 1,000 different TVs, but I cannot get it piped to you, and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll do it. We'll get it. He's got that link. It's right there on our page from last time.
He is the leader of the third biggest party, okay?
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. You have to define him.
And not just that. He used to be the youth leader of the ruling party.
The Let problem that South Africans have
Here we go.
Of right now is that we don't understand white people. White people are inferior species.
Oh, that's
us.
The first line.
We are Homo sapiens. They've got Neanderthal blood in them. This is the science, and this is not science that was done by black people. It was done by them. You understand? Abu Clive, Dobie Lewis, they were eugenicists. They studied this, and they realized that they're inferior to blacks. The white population is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. For us, it makes no sense.
Evidence is killed by Microsoft.
The savagery that they have. Whatever land that they're holding on to, either way, their numbers are dwindling. Whatever leadership that they had is dying out as well. And you know about wealth disappearing after the third generation that it's passed down to. You know, so they're on the last generation. We're dealing with the weakest whites that the world has ever seen. So we expect to have ubuntu, humanity. Unfortunately, by the strictest definition of what a human being is, white people are just below human beings.
Are we still on track?
Yeah.
The problem that South Africans have right now is that we don't understand white people. White people are inferior species to us. We are Homo sapiens.
Okay.
They've got Neanderthal blood.
So, Phil, hit the second clip that's on that page right below it. It says Malema with the ANC party. Oh, that is the one you're playing?
That's what I was playing, I believe.
A wild dog that you're trying to trace to be...
No. For whatever reason. We are being killed by Microsoft.
Yeah, I can't hear anything. So.
Oh, you can't hear it. We could hear it. It just, for whatever reason, the Malema clip...
bombs every time.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. So anyway, he starts screaming, kill the Boer. We've played that on different programs. I thought this would be my fast fix.
So... Well, the normal solution for that is to do what I did last time.
Yeah.
And that is just...
Just tell us what it is. Oh, there it is.
Okay, then Matt Gaetz starts to talk.
We'll find it before we get done. I'm gonna do a little.
I don't get it. I stuck the microphone right into the speaker.
I know. We're doing a experimental. Google Meet today. So we're learning what works and what doesn't. I'll get the for whatever reason the clip on my page. I guess is the same. With both clips, which is very odd. I know you emailed it to me before, so everybody failed on this one. Me, everybody else.
I don't understand why you can pick up my microphone that's going through this mixer, but you cannot pick up the clip that I'm playing through exactly the same mixer.
It's the magic of technology, of course. It's always the answer.
It's an analog mixer. It's not digital. Oh, okay.
So Malema, what is it? He's the head of the third largest party?
The Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF.
Okay. That sounds good. I mean.
So now, you asked earlier, but do these people, I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but essentially you were saying, do these people not understand that this is going to backfire on them?
Yeah.
You know,
I was kind of asking that rhetorical question, wasn't I?
My words for your unspoken question. And the situation is, well, you need to understand that people with that mindset that they have, which is the white man has everything. Now I want everything. I can only get it from him. Life is a zero-sum game. So to get it, I must take it away from him. That's how they reason. That's how all socialists reason. They've never created a thing. Socialism has never created anything except war. Now, these guys are, you need to understand that they were originally trained by the Soviet Union in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. That's the basis of their entire philosophy to the degree that they have one. They are still talking about the revolution. Everything for them is about the revolution. Now, they believe they have finished phase one of the revolution, which is remove the white man from any form of power and influence. Step two, get rid of him. They call that the second stage of the revolution, and you'll keep on hearing every now and then a comment from South Africa about the second phase of the revolution has begun. The second phase. Okay, so we're now at the beginning of the second phase. The pretense is gone. The masks they have been wearing are gone. You're hearing Malema openly calling for people to be killed. And then you have people like Nota Baloyi, he's another one who says white people are just beneath humans. They are not quite human.
And that is actually the clip that we heard. So people did hear that was we could hear that clearly.
Okay.
And define him again.
He is a video producer in South Africa, an influencer on the government side. What you would call an influencer. Okay. So he went on a podcast where he's in, where the host never said a peep. He just let him speak. And the guy sprouted this stuff for, it's like an hour that he went on, okay, about how whites are untermenschen, my words, not his, but that's what he described, about being Neanderthal and we have no humanity because we're white and I don't know what, all kinds of stuff like that. And how can you expect white people to have humanity if they are not human? Etc., etc., etc. Now, I am quite sure that there's a whole lot of people in the streets in LA at the moment who will agree with all those words.
Yeah, probably.
And they'll be the first ones that get killed by those very people who are the supposed humans. Anyway, so the ANC comes from that background, having been steeped in classic Soviet training and so forth, talking about revolutions, the first phase of the revolution, the second phase of the revolution. Around about 96, they started placing so-called cadres out into industry, which means they take some of their party men and they stick them into key places, just like the Soviets put political officers on U-boats, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had to deal with some of those guys. And it was eventually a disagreement between me and one of those guys that caused me to go home and tell my wife, that's it, we're out of here. It's done. It's over. And that was in the year 2000. So I saw all of this with great clarity in the year 2000. I do not understand why it has to take until 20. Why did it have to take 25 years more for people to see? I don't get it.
Yeah.
And you've heard me say a thousand times now that I am not clairvoyant. I don't have access to any special information that other people don't. Okay. The only difference is that I lived in South Africa, so I've seen this stuff. I've lived it. And if Americans don't want to live it, they better start listening.
And so who was the White House visitor? Was that the president of the ANC?
Okay, let me explain. This is interesting. The visitor was Cyril Ramaphosa.
Guys,
Cyril
we have to take a really quick break. I'm sorry. I just looked. It was 1:23. Let's take a really quick break. When we come back, we're going to zoom to the White House. By the way, I found the clip. And so we'll come back in with that and go to the White House right away. Our guest is Dr. Harry Booyans. Thank you for sticking with us while we get our technology situated. But it'll all be posted correctly at wethepeopleradio.us.
Speak of the devil. The devil appears. Baby did a bad, bad thing. 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 You ever loved someone so much you thought your little heart was gonna break into?
Bad, bad thing indeed. All right, Bill, back to your question.
I just wanted to get on with what was said at the White House, because I know the president did kind of line him out, and I believe it was a visit that took place after we cut off or we imposed sanctions and started bringing South Africans to the U.S.
Is that the question?
Yes. Just
yeah. The first folks had already landed when Cyril Ramaphosa visit arrived. Mm-hmm. So let me explain who Cyril Ramaphosa is. Right now, by title, he is the president of South Africa. So he is the Trump equivalent over there. However, what's more important to the story that we've been sharing for more than 10 years is that he was also Mandela's anointed prince. In other words, he was the guy that Mandela had hoped would be his successor. But he was also the vice president of President Zuma, the guy who took over around about 2009 and completely economically destroyed the country through corruption. So he's always been the number two of the main characters. He was the number two to Mandela. Then he was the number two to Zuma, the biggest disaster that ever hit the country. And then he took over in 2017. Significantly, he's not a Zulu. He's not a Xhosa. He's from the much smaller Venda nation in the far north of the country. The Venda generally are, call me prejudiced, but they're more industrious. So I had at least two Venda engineers on my team. So they can do stuff. They have a long, long history as the bladesmiths of that part of the world. So they knew about smelting and making blades. Hmm. Okay. So interesting people. So Ramaphosa, in 2018, when President Trump first made a comment about South Africa, he said that the government there is trying to take the farms of people and much, much worse. I have asked Mike Pompeo to look into the matter. So somebody got hold of Ramaphosa on a Bloomberg show and asked him, what has he got to say? And he said, there are no farmers being killed in South Africa. He literally looked straight in the camera and he said, there are no farmers being killed in South Africa. That is Cyril Ramaphosa. He has since revealed himself to be ineffectual at pretty much anything he lifts a finger to do. So he hasn't got much traction left in the country. To make things worse for him, in the election of last year, for the first time ever since 1994, when Mandela took over, for the first time ever, the ANC could not get a straight majority in parliament. They are now a coalition government. Who have they formed a coalition with? They formed a coalition with the Democratic Alliance, which you can essentially read as the party of most coloreds and whites. It's a very... It's a Western-oriented party. It's not socialist by nature at all. But it's intimidated because Ramaphosa, I believe, has made it quite clear that if the DA does not ally with him to form a government of national unity, then he will naturally, by the Constitution, be forced to make a deal with Malema. Or even worse, Zuma, who now has his own party. Okay, so Zuma has left the ANC, and that is why the ANC could not get a majority, is because Zuma went off with a Zulu chunk of the ANC party. So you now have a situation where there are four players on the stage. Ramaphosa with his much weakened ANC, the DA under the leadership of John Steenhuisen, who's not an Afrikaner. You have Zuma with his Spear of the Nation party. And you have Malema Kill the Boer, right? Or Julius Kill the Boer Malema. And so the DA is completely intimidated into dysfunction. It's there with Ramaphosa to form a government of national unity, but it's not as though it has any real influence other to just keep Malema out. That's the situation in South African politics. So the people who visited that day in the White House was Ramaphosa, obviously as leader of the delegation, but he also had with him John Steenhuisen, who is the leader of the main opposition, the DA, who happens to now be in a coalition government with him. Okay? And this is why so many people in South Africa took exception when Ramaphosa turned to President Trump and he said, Mr. President, have you met my white minister of agriculture? His white minister of agriculture is actually the leader of the opposition. You got that?
Yeah.
Okay. He's politically castrated leader of the opposition. And John Steenhuisen, as on cue, sits there and blathers off inanities. Okay. Also in attendance were two golfing South African friends, because South Africa has a history of producing golf stars like Gary Player and Ernie Els, who was there, and Retief Goosen, who was there. And Ramaphosa actually dared to tell Trump that if he asked his friends here, the two guys, the two golfers, they would tell him that there are no farm murders, upon which Retief Goosen said that my family was attacked on the farm.
Awkward.
Awkward, right? So they talked over that. But suddenly, out of nowhere, a female South African Zulu or Xhosa voice pipes up out of the group of media, and it says, Mr. President, what would it take for you to realize that there is not a genocide in South Africa? Nobody had used the word genocide in that conversation, certainly not President Trump. No one else had said genocide. So what is this person doing asking that question? And the answer is simple. She's a plant, or a plant in your accent. Okay, she's planted there to ask that question, because Ramaphosa didn't look left, didn't look right, but jumped in immediately and said, oh, I can answer that question. Okay, Trump's face was absolutely precious. He sat there and he got this bemused grin on his face, and he let Ramaphosa hang himself. So Ramaphosa goes ahead and he makes these comments about, these men who are here will tell you that there are no farm murders and blah, 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 blah. And that, it's when Ramaphosa usurped the role of the American president to whom the question had been posed. It's when Ramaphosa did that, that Trump reacted with, yes, but we have thousands of reports, and this must be answered. And that's when he spoke the famous words, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Oops, sorry. I meant to say, whoever, turn down the lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when the lights were turned down, all of the entire world got to see this clip that we were trying to share with everybody a few minutes ago, with Malema dancing on stage, yelling, kill the farmer, kill the Boer. And Trump saying, this must be answered. And he asked, why have you not put that man in prison?
And what was his reaction to that?
This is when John, completely castrated Steenhuisen, decides to pipe up. And that was the end of his career, as far as I can tell. He pipes up and he says, well, that's why we are in the government of national unity, is to keep that lot from getting any power.
Oops.
He gave away his greatest fear. Instead of hanging tough in negotiation with the ANC, He went, he just reacted on pure fear. We better form a national government with the ANC so as to keep Malema and those murderers out of there. That is not a good basis for a leader. The man is a rat. Okay? He is not welcome in my home after this. He has exhibited just exactly what a low-class idiot he is. He's an incompetent leader. He's not worthy of the people of South Africa. That man has to go. And I think he will. I think everybody has now seen just what he's actually made of. And it's his end. So hopefully the DA will get themselves another leader. Meanwhile, and this is the bit that Americans do not know, Ramaphosa has gone back to South Africa. They obviously know that. But a few days later, he attended a meeting. I don't know whether it was Cape Town or Johannesburg, but when he walked into this hall, the lights were dimmed. And he started laughing, and he said, oh, I almost thought that somebody was dimming the lights to play another video for me. Okay, so he was taking the hell out of Trump with that statement. So I know of at least one American who's got that video and who has sworn to make sure that it lands on the desk of the State Department.
Wow.
So these guys are laughing Trump off, okay? And you need to understand why that is. They are so in bed with China that they are completely bespoke. When you are speaking to South Africa, you are speaking to China.
Well, yeah, that's the only friend they have right now.
Yeah. Okay. And I can, there's like a complaint list. Let me just tell you, here are some of the things that have happened that maybe folks don't know. Number one, the ANC imposed a tariff of 75% on U.S. poultry imports. They abstained and subsequently refused to condemn the Russian invasion of Ukraine. They actually went along with trying to make another COVID vaccine at the time, and they didn't want to be part of the U.S. effort. And then when their effort failed and they weren't getting any vaccine from the U.S., Ramaphosa said, this is vaccine apartheid. So you were accused of the U.S. was accused of vaccine apartheid. Okay. Then they made it quite clear that they're very cozy with Hamas. On 7 October 2023, they refused to condemn that attack. And in fact, Naledi Pandor, the South African charge d'affaires, phoned up Hamas and congratulated them on the attack. They then turned around and blamed Israel for the Hamas terror attack. Then they hosted the Russian cargo ship Lady R. That ship sailed around the Cape, switched off its transponder. It was like 100 miles past Cape Town. It switched off its transponder, doubled back quickly to Simonstown Naval Harbor, and goods were exchanged in that naval harbor. Okay? And then the ship left, and when it got to its previous point where it had switched off its transponder, it switched it back on. The U.S. tracked that. The U.S. knew about that. Oh, I lost my screen. Give me a second. Here we go. Okay. As this person says, the U.S. tried various polite and discreet diplomatic requests for clarity on the Lady R, and the ANC has rebuffed all of that. So the list goes on. Part two. So it's been grey-listed for money laundering and terror financing. And then, on the very Air Force base from which I flew out to the northern border in the 1980s, a Russian military cargo plane came to land. at that South African Air Force base. Okay? That's when the U.S. had already placed sanctions on Russia. Why was South Africa allowing a Russian cargo plane to land? Then, for its next trick, it recruited former U.S. and NATO pilots to train People's Liberation Army pilots of China at the Test Flying Academy of South Africa. And then it participated in a Chinese Communist Party-funded political training school in Tanzania to teach authoritarian ideology. That's your friend, South Africa. Do you understand why Trump is on its case?
Yeah.
It's not just Afrikaner farmers. It's all of these things.
It's all of it. Yeah.
Get this right.
And the other part of it is it comes here next. Because that's what has the history right straight along with all these things. How about this? Quick break. We'll come back. I don't know why the break seems so fast. It seems like every time we turn around, it's like time is blowing by. We'll come back and maybe hit a few of the parallels of what we're seeing now here and what they're seeing in South Africa, just so nobody misses any of that or thinks we're wildly unique. That's always the thing. Oh, we're the ones blazing the trail. It's like, maybe not. Our guest is Dr. Harry Billions. We are discussing South Africa, and we are going to come back with you. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Guys start to realize that eternal fate has turned its back on here. It's 2 a.m. here.
It's 2 a.m.
It's 2 a.m. Fear is gone.
It's 2 a.m.
The sun is still warm.
Okay, so the parallel stuff between South Africa and here is a lot tighter than I think most people would realize.
The parallels, and there's an umbilical. As for the parallels, let me put it this way. We don't have the time for it left, but the parallels between American history and the Afrikaners' history, they are so coincident, it's almost hilarious. In terms of big events, both nations fought two wars against the Brits. Okay? Both tried to get independent of them. We succeeded first time around, failed second time, and here is the result now. You don't know how fortunate you are that those Americans in the 1770s hung tough and kept going and got French help and got you free of the Brits, okay? Because they would have sold you down the river. I promise you that. Like they sold us down the river, sold all their own people down the river. Now, I can carry on with heaps and heaps of parallels, but the best phrase I have, and this is something you can hear a guy like Alex Newman also echo, and that is, the Afrikaner is the closest thing on earth to an American outside America. We have the same views on life, the same thing about don't touch our guns or our Bibles. Do you know how to shoot? Do you know how to pick a horse? Okay, growing up on a dangerous frontier, all that kind of stuff.
Well, and started your country for basically the same reason, you know?
Yeah. And when some of those old fur trekkers went north from the southern tip of South Africa, they said expressly that their intention was to go and create their own country along the lines of the United States. It's always been heavily inspired by the principles of the United States. Okay. In terms of parallels, maybe I'll just hold it there for a minute. But I think what's way more important is the umbilical that drives this. And there are two umbilicals here. One. And it's two individual gentlemen. Let's start with the earlier one first. Back in the 1970s, South Africa was still going strong. The first Soweto riots had happened, and Cuba had gone into Angola. Round about that time, there was a meeting in London of a bunch of very rich people. One of them was an American of Hungarian extraction, and his name was Georgi Schwartz. He met with a number of other people to discuss how to take that government of South Africa down. Life went on, and in the next few years, he started various things. And it was always under the guise of philanthropy. Always this philanthropic flag that's flying over everything. He's handing out money for this and for that, and he's so good and he's so brilliant, and it's all just great. What a phenomenally good human being. Meanwhile, back in Hungary, the Hungarians knew this piece of work. They knew him. Okay? More particularly, Viktor Orban knew him. Anyway, so as time progressed, he finally hit on this great idea that he was going to host the process by which the then South African government was going to meet with the ANC to try and see if they can sort out a future for South Africa. So the future of South Africa was facilitated and sorted out under the guiding hand of none other than George Soros.
I was waiting for him to pop up.
The very man who's funding half the crap that's happening in your country. Well, yep. Ain't that a surprise?
Yep.
Okay. So please understand that we were his first experiment. He cut his teeth on this thing, on our country. He killed off my people in that process. What you're seeing now, 3,000 to 4,000 farmers dead, horribly tortured to death. Thank you, George Soros. That's you.
And you gave me a number this morning when we were talking. We were messing around with the connection here and tried to get that all straightened out. And you had said that if it was a relative number of deaths in South Africa to the number of farmers in our country.
Yeah, you've got just over 3 million white farmers in America, okay? That's 100 times more farmers than in South Africa. Since there are about 3,000 to 4,000 dead white farmers now, tortured and murdered to death, what would it be called in the United States if 300,000 to 400,000 farmers were murdered on their farms in attacks? What would you call it?
Well, I'd call it a genocide.
And that is why people call it a genocide in South Africa.
Yep.
You'll notice that I've used the word genocide without calling it a genocide. You called it a genocide. I'm very careful about that word. At the most simple, it is a targeted collective attack. It is more likely better described by ethnic cleansing, okay?
Yeah.
But at the relative scale, relative to the number of people that could be killed, it is a genocide.
Yeah.
How the hell do you hide 300,000 murder deaths of white farmers in the United States. And why, in the name of all that's precious, would you try to hide that behind the gun violence in Chicago and Detroit?
Yeah.
Because that's what your media is doing. They say, oh, South Africa is a violent place. You know, 3,000 farmers here or there is not a big deal. Yeah. Now apply it to your situation and see what it looks like.
Right. When you make the numbers a relative.
Yeah.
Back to the statistics again, right?
Yeah, statistics. Just multiply by 100. Actually, you've got 3.25 million white farmers. I said let it be 3. I said let the 30,000, you divide the 30,000 South African farmers in there, you get 100. So multiply the 3 to 4,000 dead farmers by 100. That's 300 to 400,000 murdered white farmers in America. What would Americans call that? And would they say, oh, well, you know, America is a very violent place. Just look at all the shootings in Chicago. How would that work? Exactly.
Hopefully not. Hopefully not well.
So that's the first umbilical is with George Soros. And he's working on the U.S. right now. I'm sure you guys understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Surely you understand that. Okay. Separate from that, there's another thread. When Glenn, who was it? Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger, who took a look at the Twitter files. Elon Musk took over Twitter, called it X, and he let those guys go through those files. And they found out where all these roads lead, all these efforts at twisting the narrative, all these efforts at shutting people up, all these efforts at doxing them, at killing their accounts, all those things. Where was it coming from? It was coming from a thing called the Global Engagement Center. The Global Engagement Center was demanded by Hillary Clinton, and she got hold of a guy called Richard Stengel. S-T-E-N-G-E-L. She got hold of Richard and said, you got to do something about this. And that is why he got onto a stage one day, and in a moment of intellectual weakness, he declared, well, I was Obama's propaganda czar. He used the words, not me, he used them, he himself. He said, I was the propaganda czar. And I believe that all nations have that. I see no problem with that. So he's the guy who sees no problem with it. The tool is the Global Engagement Center. Okay? And when you start looking at what's all involved in there, you start seeing people like the owner of Wikipedia. So next time you use Wikipedia, please be aware that you are dealing with something that's tainted. People need to wake up. They need to do the homework. And they need to understand who's who in the bloody zoo that they live in, because they don't. And so who the hell is Richard Stengel? Well, then people go back just a little and they say, oh, he was editor for Time magazine. Must be a great guy. Well, actually, here's where he comes from. Hold on.
Spoiler alert, we have about a minute and a half. I got my
copy of Long Walk to Freedom by Nelson Mandela. And on his thank you page, he says, acknowledgements. I am deeply grateful to Richard Stengel, who collaborated with me in the creation of this book, providing invaluable assistance in editing and revising the first parts and in writing of the latter parts. In fact, what he did is he removed the fact from the book that Nelson Mandela was one of the main leaders of the South African Communist Party. He knew full well that if ordinary Americans read that, it would be over with Mandela.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why Mandela is an angel that walks on water in the United States is Richard Stengel, okay? He BS'd the world back in 1994, 95 with his book, and he's been BSing you all the way along. He's still out there. He's still getting on TV every now and then. He's still a talking head for MSNBC and CNN.
And I linked all that on the page for today just so people can go and read about that.
So those are your two umbilicals, guys. Don't tell me South Africa does not influence your country.
Exactly.
You are connected by the umbilical.
Harry, we will talk about that some more on a different day. We will endeavor to thread the needle and connect with you again. Our guest has been Dr. Harry Bullions. We've been talking about South Africa. You can find the archive at wethepeopleradio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Until we close our eyes for good.